time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
On a Monday, good to have you with us. Thank you, Chad Erickson. Lots to do over the next 60 minutes of this broadcast. We'll talk college football. Bill Bender is here. We will talk mostly football between college and the pros on this show. We'll fill in the gaps in odds and ends at the end of the program. Lot to talk about from the weekend that was. My man, Sam Yarnell, will hang out with us as well. And it says it at the top of the screen, it's Overreaction Monday, Sam Yarnell. Time for all of us to go, that none of us know what we thought we knew. Sam made a comment right before we started the show today. He said, Nick Saban doesn't know what he's talking about. Nick Saban doesn't know anything. And I said, my response to Sam was, none of us know anything. That's the big takeaway I come with from week one of the NFL season. By the way, for the record, Page versus the Prince, Sam went 3-1. I went 2-2. So we are off and running in the 2024 edition of Page versus the Prince. We'll recap that later and talk about it a little later on in the week. But Sam, week one, the Sunday portion of it in the NFL. And, I mean, look, I let me just say a couple things. Like the Patriots beating the Bengals, that sort of thing. I've made this comment for years, right? I have said for years watching the NFL. And Nick Ferguson, our buddy, the former NFL safety, always gets mad at me when I say this. Teams don't know they suck early in the year. Teams don't know they're not supposed to be good early in the year. We see this every year in the NFL where a team gets off to a fast start. Happens in baseball, happens in basketball. My God, the year the Spurs got Wembanyama in the draft the year before that, everybody's like, oh, they're going to be terrible. They got off to like a 4-1 start. It happens in every sport every year. Teams don't know they're supposed to suck. And the Patriots were a shining example of that on Sunday going into Cincinnati and beating the Bengals. I never deduce too much from week one in the NFL. Unless we're talking about the Giants and Daniel Jones is terrible. I put my belief in you. I say take the Giants plus 1.5. And before you know it, it's halftime. I'm getting text messages from people after I posted my betting slip on X and on Facebook. I'm getting messages from people threatening to come and find me. Saying they put their mortgage on it. All right, not exactly. Help me out,
Sam. If you put your mortgage on the New York Giants, you got bigger problems than finding Jason Page. That's true. Sorry.
Amen.
Oh, Jason. It's the best time of the year. It's that Monday most. After week one when half of us are having the best victory Monday.
We're all going to win the Super Bowl. We're all going to win the Super Bowl. Yes.
And the other half of us, it's dire straits already.
The season's over.
Sell the farm. So we'll go game by game eventually. No. But my main overreaction, and I said this to Jason, this was one of the first things I said as we were talking about the whole slate of games last night. We, the media, totally overanalyzed every single thing. Not to say that we don't every season, but this season specifically, we overanalyzed every single thing about seemingly 28 of the 32 teams in the NFL. It is absolutely crazy how remarkably similar these teams were to exactly where they left off last year. I mean, Jason, start at the top, right? Steelers and Falcons. Falcons still can't do anything offensively, even with the new quarterback at the top. Steelers, they're still just going to play rock fight football all year long, bet the under in every single game, and that's, yeah, a 9-8 team. That's what they looked like yesterday.
Yeah, I can't argue with you.
You were high on the Falcons. What were your thoughts when you put up 10 points against Mike Tomlin and Justin Fields?
I don't panic off of week one. It's the first time these guys have played four. You have to remember this. NFL preseason doesn't stop at the end of the preseason. It really goes for the first 2 or 3 weeks of the regular season. We see this every year. Tons of whistles, tons of turnovers, tons of sloppy play, a million false starts, interceptions, timing is off. It's the first time these guys are playing at full speed. It's the first time these guys are playing 4 quarters of NFL football. They were talking about, I think, last night in that Rams game when Chris Collinsworth finally realized that, oh, yeah, you need more than a field goal in overtime to win. Thanks, Chris. That these guys are winded. Man, an overtime game in week one, I mean, for those offensive linemen, those defensive linemen, that's rough. I'm not surprised the Lions were able to just march down the field as casually as they did in overtime and basically throw the football once and win the game. I'm not surprised about any of that because week one it's basically the final preseason game. It's the real tune-up game in so many regards. So I don't go crazy based of what we saw in week one, unless we're talking about Daniel Jones.
You know who it didn't take a whole game to get warmed up, though? It took him 2 drives, I'll admit you that. But my goodness, for the last everything but the first 3 drives of that game, Josh Allen proved he should be the MVP.
Oh, God, it's 1 week. Calm down.
I mean, my goodness, come on. Josh Allen was him yesterday. And the Bills were so impressive. I mean, they outscored the Cardinals 34-11 after going down 17-0, which, yeah, they looked really, really bad coming out. But I think the Bills are going to do, and this is the homer inside me, I am admitting it now, but I think the Bills are going to do a lot better than these people who wrote them off, Jason. Caleb Williams, too. I know week one, Caleb Williams looked like he was pretty good against a Tennessee defense. I know the stat line isn't completely there. Don't get me wrong. He, on paper, is not a good look back at week one. But when you watch the film, the movement was there. The understanding of the offense in that game was there. And the comeback ability, right? Like, Tennessee, they had the lead in that game. Caleb having to come back in that game, promising for a young quarterback. That was my takeaway.
Yeah, Will Levis chucking the ball all over the place. By the way, if we're going to go crazy off week one and just start talking about guys should win MVP off week one, Derek Carr. Derek Carr's your MVP. There it is. I mean, wow. 19 of 23, 200 yards, 3 touchdowns. It's great. And Bryce Young still stinks. There you go.
On HM.
There's segment one. So what happens if you draft the wrong guy at the top of the draft? It'd set you back 3, 4, 5 years. We're coming back. Jordan Love is hurt. What does it mean for the Packers? All of that and more next. Bender joins us coming up in about 10 minutes from the Sporting News. Their fantastic national college football writer. Get some thoughts with him on week 2 of the college football season. How's that whole Deion Sanders thing working out for Colorado right now? How's that working out? I told you a year ago. And people are just coming around now to what I was saying a year ago. That's why you have to watch. You want to be ahead? You have to watch, unless it's me picking the Giants in week one, getting a point and a half, in which case don't listen to a word I say. Sam Yarnell, we continue the conversation on week one in the NFL. Go back to Friday night. the debacle in Brazil that was the NFL, the game in South America that is being panned by just about everybody. And how good must it have felt? How great must it have felt to be the Packers and have to fly home with an injured Jordan Love in tow and have to wait until you get back to know just how bad the injury is because you're not going to go and have them see doctors and do all that stuff in Brazil. And you got to sit there and hold your breath for 24 hours or so. If you're the Packers, your fans, that organization, you find out it is an injury that is fairly serious, but it's going to be weeks as opposed to months. Still, the overall experience of this Brazil game on a Friday night where the NFL jumps through a loophole to have an NFL game on a Friday night, this thing has gotten hit every which way to Sunday, Sam.
It has. And I think as much as like, yeah, it is getting kind of old with the overseas games. There's a large contingency, it seems, of Packers fans ready and willing to jump on like the grass on the field, which like, yeah, it wasn't great. But also I was talking to multiple people while the game was going on. And I think the consensus that we kind of reached, all of us being kind of in the sports world, was that it didn't seem that much worse than your typical rain Week game one. On a natural yeah. grass field. Like, think of a rain game at FedEx Field or a rain game at Lambeau Field. That's kind of what it felt like. If I'm a Packers fan today, I'm furious with Jalen Carter. We cannot act like this guy's just had a completely clean history and that was not a very, very questionable way of not only going after the quarterback, but also tackling the quarterback when his teammate was already on top of him. I think that there's a serious problem when this is now the reputation that Jalen Carter has accrued in the first game of his second season in the league. Not a great look for the Eagles.
Can I just jump in on that real quick?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to anyway, but I was trying to be polite. Let me just jump in on that and say this. Guys are taught to play through the whistle. Guys are taught to play through the whistle. We hear that all the time. I'm not saying what Jalen Carter did was clean. I'm not saying it was right. I'm not saying it was wrong. I'm just saying it's real easy when you watch something in slow-mo 100 times to say that a guy is doing something wrong. You know, in the moment, and look, I'll be the first one to criticize guys for dirty plays if anybody's watched this show. To me, I don't have as much. I know I'm probably in the minority on this. I don't have as much of a problem with that play, given that we're watching it in slow-mo 100 times. He's doing it in real time. He's playing through the whistle. That being said, finish your thought on this game.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Saquon Barkley's a beast. if I were a Giants fan, I would be just ill after week one with the performance that they had and Saquon. But, this is going to be a very interesting next couple of weeks as we enter the era of the no hip drop tackle. I was obviously watching all of the games yesterday. I think there were four different instances or four different games, I should say, in which I saw an appearance of a player complaining to the referee that they wanted a flag for a hip drop tackle, which the league obviously outlawed this year. We talked about this for a whole week in the middle of the summer, in the middle of the show. Mm-hmm. But it'll be very interesting to kind of see where this goes,
Sam,
Jason.
Here's the question, though. I mean, we only got a few minutes left, and then I got to do Bill. What on earth are you doing if you're the Packers? Are you going to ride with Malik Willis? Are you going to pick up the phone and call Ryan Tannehill? Because somebody's going to call Tannehill. Somebody else is going to lose a quarterback. Somebody's going to go and call Ryan Tannehill. And look, I know he sucked last year with the Titans, but don't you have to bring in Ryan Tannehill at this point if you're the Green Bay Packers?
Maybe. But you know what my first move is?
Who?
And you're going to hate this. If I'm the Green Bay Packers and Brian Gutekunst or whatever his name is.
Gutekunst, yeah.
My first phone call is I'm calling the Cleveland Browns and seeing if they will take a 7th-round pick for Jameis Winston. And if they say yes, that's my quarterback.
They're not making them. But did you watch Deshaun Watson in week one? They're not making that move.
If Deshaun Watson is healthy with the amount of money they are paying him, they cannot afford to bench him.
They can't afford to keep him on the field. They can't afford to keep him on the field if he's playing that bad, Sam.
You cannot pay them the guaranteed money. You cannot pay a player, any player at any position, let alone quarterback.
So you're going to suck and pay him that much money as opposed to putting in Jameis Winston, who gives you a better chance to win, perhaps, gives you a better chance to win, and you're still going to have to swallow the money anyway.
Because if you suck under Deshaun Watson this year, you get a quarterback in a quarterback-rich draft. You play him
this
next year,
a great
and Deshaun
quarterback
Watson
draft?
Becomes the most no. expensive player, the most expensive backup in the league.
No, can't do it. I can't do it, Sam. I can't keep Deshaun Watson on the field playing the way he played on Sunday. And again, it is just one game, so I'm not going to lose my mind. Unless it's the Giants and Daniel Jones, I'm not going to lose my mind. But that there's no way you could trade away Jameis Winston. One, even on top of the fact that, and I know you can't plan for injuries, Deshaun Watson is injury prone. And I think the realization also, in the final few seconds here, I think the realization is this. The last time Deshaun Watson was a consistently good quarterback was 4 years ago, Sam. It just might not be there anymore. On top of the fact that he's got all this guaranteed money coming anyway. And maybe the motivation is gone. He doesn't look like a guy that's enjoying playing the game right now, Sam. All the love looks like it's gone.
Tim.
Guess we'll find out soon enough. Bill Bender's next. Sports Wrap continues. Good to have you with us on this Monday. All right, we've done some NFL. And don't worry, there is more NFL to come. Talk about the Tyreek Hill situation in about 20 minutes. But we got to spend a couple of segments talking college football. Bill Bender, every time I think we know something about sports, turns out we really don't know all that much at all. I mean, that's honestly, whether it's the NFL week one or college football the first couple of weeks, throw all the rankings out the window. We don't know what we're talking about, do we?
No, and I mean, I think Notre Dame, maybe you're inferring that one.
Yeah, that's one.
Well, one that you can, that's just how this works. You lightly pencil them into the playoff after their impressive victory against Texas A&M, and then they just don't show up against Northern Illinois. It was stunning. They're one of five. I think Matt Fortuna tweeted that they were one of five teams without a touchdown pass this season. The Riley Leonard thing isn't working out. Kind of even worse than Sam Hartman last year. That's the most stunning thing to me, is they're just not getting the production out of the quarterback position they need. I don't know what you think, Jason. I think even if they go 11-1, there'll be a lot of serious conversations about their playoff worth because of that loss to a Mid-American Conference team.
Even if that Mid-American Conference team goes and, you know, let's say Northern Illinois goes undefeated. Doesn't it change that loss? Don't we have to start recalibrating our thinking about the depth of talent in college football? Isn't that some of what we're learning here? Doesn't it? We can't just automatically say you lose to Northern Illinois, you're done. Like, don't we have to recalibrate this a little bit, especially when you're going to have a playoff that's going to have some teams in it that we typically haven't thought is having an opportunity to play in the playoffs?
Right, and I think it's one of those deals where I walked outside Michigan Stadium. I was there on Saturday. And
oh, we'll get to that.
After they lose to Texas. But the point being, to your point, is, you know, there were families taking portraits and selfies and smiles, and it's a sunny day, and it's not the, you know, if this were the 14 playoff era or the BCS era, everybody walking out of that stadium, it would have felt like a funeral. It wasn't like that. That was one of my observations from Saturday, that because there's still hope. You know, yeah, Michigan looked bad, but if they go 10-2 in the Big Ten and find a way on offense, they'll still get in the playoff. And I think that's one of the things that this 12-team playoff has changed about these huge September games.
But don't we have to have a conversation as it relates to Michigan? While that is a possibility, I mean, heck, the New York football Giants could just suddenly look like world beaters over the next, you know, 17 games, 16 games. All in all, they're probably not. Most of the consensus seems to be around this Michigan team right now that this is just isn't that good of a football team. They just simply lost too much.
Well, yeah, and the offense is very ordinary, is how I would put it. They're not dominant up front. The running backs aren't as good as Blake Corum was. Obviously, Davis Warren and Alex Orji aren't as good as J.J. McCarthy was. Now, and you have to understand that on some level. You know, you lose 13 NFL players, you're probably not going to be as good the next season in college football at a place like Michigan. They don't reload like Alabama and Georgia do. So that's part of it. The other part Jason, Texas is pretty good. I mean, I've sensed that two drives in, you just kind of saw that Quinn Ewers wasn't really scared of that Michigan defense. He threw a third down touchdown pass that got called back on the game's first drive. He was in complete control, stepped through well, and they have two quarterbacks, by the way. So my takeaway from that, yeah, Michigan's bad. Michigan will probably go 8-4 and we'll forget about them. The other half of it was this Texas team is probably good to win a national championship, good enough to do that.
We've seen Oregon, now Notre Dame, here in the first couple of weeks, you know, these letdowns that we're seeing the first couple of weeks into the season. What does it all say about conference realignment and the future of independent schools?
Right. You know, I think Boise State played well, and Oregon, you know, got up and down a little bit. I think there's still a little, like, pinch-me moment occasionally with some of these games. And I think as, you know, this weekend even more so, you're going to have some of those moments where you're going to watch Oregon State and say, wait, why are they playing that game right now? It's a September game. That's a traditional rivalry. You're going to have moments like, Kansas State and Arizona on Friday night. Those are ranked teams. That's a Big 12 game now. And I think those are still moments that I have. Yes, Boston College in Missouri is not a league game, at least not yet. And that's probably the best we can do on this week three schedule.
Iowa and Iowa State, surprised?
A little bit that Iowa wasn't able to close that game out. That was, I had a bad weekend in picks, and that happens, or especially early in the season it happens, because you're not, I'm not making excuses. I mean, a bad week's a bad week, but I thought for sure when Iowa pulled ahead early that that game was over, but Iowa State continued to claw at them. Iowa made a couple questionable coaching decisions by Kirk Ferentz. I heard the joke this morning, since when was Kirk Ferentz an analytics guy? And Iowa State was able to pull that out. Impressive from the standpoint that the Cyclones had never beaten a ranked Iowa team at Kinnick Stadium. So maybe wow. Matt Campbell has one of those teams that can mix it up a little bit in the Big 12.
Yeah, perhaps they do. Back to Boise State for a second. Is Ollie Gordon still the best running back in the nation? You know, the kid from Boise State looked really good.
Yeah, Ashton Genty probably is right now. I mean, Ollie Gordon has he hasn't really gotten going. They got lucky, by the way. Arkansas helped them out a little bit in that overtime win, and bad beat for the people that like to gamble a little bit. But, Oklahoma State still got through South Dakota State and still got through Arkansas. Now they hit the road and play Tulsa, who people are going to say, yeah, maybe that's an upset bid on the road. They've played some close games in the past. But I think Mike Gundy and that team have done their job. But with teams focusing on stopping Ollie Gordon, yeah, they're going to need more out of that offensive line if they want to win the Big 12.
Yeah, they certainly are. Real quick here, just a thought on to go back to Michigan here. When we're talking about the teams that haven't disappointed so far, obviously Georgia really isn't playing anybody. But, you know, talk about what we've seen with Texas here over the first couple of weeks and sort of getting a feeling of, while there's some uncertainty in the middle and who those last teams to make the playoff will be, you certainly feel like a team like Texas is going to be there when all is said and done.
Yes, Texas, Georgia, Ohio State would probably be the three most solid picks in the country right now. Georgia hasn't given up a defensive or an offensive touchdown. Ohio State hasn't given up an offensive touchdown. When I see that, even through 2 weeks, that's pretty impressive. And then Texas, like I said, so many skill position players. They attacked Michigan in multiple ways. They ran the ball effectively on Michigan. They got what they wanted, essentially. And with Quinn Ewers, there are moments, or there's a handful of throws with him during a game where it's like, you know, what happened? But in general, really exciting team.
We're coming right back. More with Bill next. Let's keep the conversation moving on college football with our friend Bill Bender, who does a terrific job on college football with the Sporting News. Did I say he was with the Sporting News? I might have forgotten to mention that. He's not just some random Yahoo that we bring on he's the guy sitting at your bar that you can talk about college football with. Although, if somebody sees you at a bar, Bill, and they want to talk college football with you, will you?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I got my high school helmet behind me. I think I'm more than that. Those playing days are long past since gone.
I got to tell you, when people find out what I do, or they, if I run into people and they recognize me and they want to talk about sports, I don't want to talk to you about sports. I am the worst. It's just, it's what I do for a living. If you're an auto mechanic and I run into you, I'm not going to talk to you about the lug nuts that you were taking off of a wheel today. I'm just not doing it.
I might be a little different. I like the lacrosse dads. I use the football and lacrosse dads to kind of gauge how people feel. And, for example, I feel pretty good about Ohio State here in Columbus.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I like hearing their reactions because it feeds into some of the stuff I write.
Did you watch did you watch anything that wasn't football this weekend?
No.
Not a single thing that you can point to that you watched that wasn't football?
Well, I can tell you exactly what I did. I went to Ann Arbor.
You had to go home. Okay.
I got home in time for Boise State, Oregon. The phone was to the side of the car with Colorado, Nebraska on. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, between running the kids to their sporting events, I watched Dallas, Cleveland, some of the 1 o'clock games, and got home and watched, the Lions and Rams. So yeah, that's a great point, Jason. I did not watch something that wasn't football this weekend.
Can we talk about Nebraska and Colorado? I've said, I was able to hold off all this time. I went through an entire segment with you and I did not talk about Nebraska and Colorado. Is it going to take another full season of 4 wins, 5 wins before the realization hits the hierarchy at Colorado that Deion's just not that good of a football coach, that he doesn't have the talent and hasn't been able to bring in the level of talent? Or has this thing been a ruse all along, and when his boys are gone, he's going to bolt from that program anyway? And everybody's going to look the fool.
Secondary coach in the NFL, perhaps, or some way to stay in that. You could see it. I think Saturday was a classic case of Matt Rhule showing you how to build a program. And Nebraska's not there yet, but if you consider they're in year two, they took their lumps last year. They're not turning the ball over as much. They have a quarterback that you can build around in Dylan Raiola. They run the football well, and his track record is proven. So when you had the chance to hire Matt Rhule or Deion Sanders, it's a classic case of short-term gratification. Yeah, Deion was great. 3 years from now, I think you and I both know the right answer about which one of those programs will be in better standing.
Yeah, it's very true. You mentioned Raiola, and there's all these comparisons because of the way he looks and his hair and all of that stuff and some of the off-schedule plays he can make, a la Patrick Mahomes. Put all that aside, all the conversation aside, the kid's pretty good.
He is.
He's 19 years old. I didn't see a guy out there on Saturday night that looked like a 19-year-old.
So the three stats you look at with that is accuracy, pretty good so far. Can he throw the ball down the field without making too many mistakes like interception, game-changing things? Doing that as well. Can he? And he does have a running game to support him. So again, and the it factor, you mentioned the Mahomes comparisons. It's part of his aura, as the kids would say these days, I suppose, that he does have a presence. And they haven't had a presence at quarterback. They've tried to talk themselves into guys like Jeff Sims and the Martinezes. But this kid's for real. And there is a very good chance that they go to Ohio State with a 7-0 record in about a month. And that's when we'll really feel whether or not this team's for real.
Do you expect there to be rumblings though, as it relates to Deion, if this thing continues to devolve sort of the way it is? We didn't even talk about Shedeur Sanders leaving the field early and all of that stuff. And the look that sort of put out there, talking about Shedeur Sanders, not Shiloh, who obviously was injured, in the game. Do you think we'll hear rumblings during the season, or is it going to take an entire season before we start to hear rumblings from within as it relates to Deion in Colorado?
Oh, it's coming. It'll come in October. Wow. Yeah, you know what I mean. Like everybody, it's the build somebody up to tear them down thing. And I think with Shedeur Sanders, he's under the microscope. I saw the reel going around about how he was talking about his offensive line on Saturday. And we pick these quarterbacks. You know how we pick. I think we pick potential first-round quarterbacks apart more than any human beings in sports. And that's coming with him. I don't think I'm wrong about that. All the way into their you know, yesterday, how much did we break down Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and these guys on their first start? Mm-hmm. And that starts in college. I mean, we're doing it with Carson Beck, Quinn Ewers. It's like a car. You just try to find anything wrong with it, and there's plenty wrong. You're talking to a guy that ran his Honda Pilot and hit the side mirror on the garage for about the 18th time last night.
Give me a thought on Kyle McCord before we go real quick. Sort of, hey, a little bit of a reintroduction. He looks pretty good over at Syracuse.
ACC's fun. It's wide open. I don't know what to think. And him throwing for 4 touchdowns and a half was nice. Good for Syracuse. If they win a couple more, they're going to be ranked. And Fran Brown was a good hire. That's another one where it might take a year or two, but they made the right hire.
Yeah. And you know what the thing is? We talked about this last week when we had you on. Everybody was down on this quarterback class. And all of a sudden, you're starting to see guys sort of rise up and say, wait a minute. We're not chopped liver here.
No, especially Beck, Ewers. Yeah. They're playing very well, playing under control, and it's really good to see.
Bill Bender, check him out, The Sporting News. He does great work on college football. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
We got a lot more to do on Sports Wrap. Don't go anywhere. Tyreek Hill next. All right, let's take it to segment 5 on this Monday edition of Sports Wrap. And something to consider. Sam Yarnell. Odds and ends coming up in 10 minutes, by the way. We'll get in everything else in a tight little window that we didn't talk about during the show today that wasn't football related.
Wait, there was non-football that happened this week?
There was. Anthony Rizzo went back to Chicago and played against the Cubs. It was feel good. I'm not putting it in odds and ends, but I just thought I'd throw
it
in.
What is he, the tight end for the Vikings now?
Come on. Hey, Rizzo's actually playing pretty well for the Yankees since coming off the DL, or IL, or whatever they call it these days. So, Sam, let's talk about this Tyreek Hill incident. I held back because I wanted to kind of give it its own segment, wanted to let it breathe a little more than just trying to squeeze it into a football segment, because this is about more than football. And I just want to say this. I am somebody that has been a beneficiary of white privilege in the area of police matters. I have had several instances where either being a member of the media, just being this non-threatening looking white guy has been an advantage for me in matters of dealing with the police. There's no getting around it. I got pulled over once. I'll give you an example. And I there's a reason I'm bringing this up. Not to make it about me, but to explain how these things are dealt with differently depending on the color of your skin. I got pulled over years ago. It turned out I didn't have a valid driver's license, and so there was some confusion on my license, and I was driving a car that I wasn't supposed to be driving at the time, where I should have gotten cuffed, stuffed, and put into jail overnight, right? And a cop pulled me over in East Haven, Connecticut, and he couldn't have been nicer. He was understanding. He said, "All right, leave your car in this lot. Have your brother come pick you up. Have him bring the car back to your house. Go get the license thing figured out." There was an understanding. There's been a couple of times where I've gotten pulled over for, you know, running a light that was yellow turning red. Maybe it just turned red. I got pulled over one time. Cop saw my media badge hanging from the center thing. "Oh, you work for ESPN. Oh, I've heard you." This was in New York when I was living in New York City. "Oh, I've heard you on the radio. I enjoy your show, blah, blah, blah. Now have a good night. Don't worry about it." We live in a country where not everybody is treated equally by the police. If you saw what happened to Tyreek Hill on Sunday, just hours before he's scheduled to play in week one, if you saw what took place and you're looking at it on the screen, and only because passersby stopped to take video of this happening, you can't help but be horrified. One police officer has already been taken off duty as a result of this. There is talk that Tyreek Hill might file a lawsuit of some kind, and we're going to have to see what happens. But, and we still don't have every single detail from this. I need to see, you know, the cameras that cops wear on them. There's a lot that still needs to be determined about how this went down, why it went down the way that it did, Sam. And I give all the credit in the world to Tyreek Hill for how he handled this after the game, because I sure as hell wouldn't have been that calm in that sort of situation. And he went out there, played a football game, talked about it after the game. And I think his point is very valid when he asks the question, what if I wasn't Tyreek Hill? You know, this wouldn't have been filmed and taken care of the same way, and it wouldn't have... It just... The whole thing is very upsetting to see, and it sort of overshadowed the early part of Sunday when we were getting ready to consume NFL football for week one.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously a tough situation. You know, this has been such a story around, you know, in so many facets of this country for so long. But I thought it was interesting, this development or this new leg of the story, right? Because so often when these things happen, athletes will make a comment about it. One of the quarterbacks, I could have mentioned the Green Bay Packers working out to try and replace Jordan Love for the next 4 weeks, is Colin Kaepernick, right? Who did that? They're often told, you know, shut up and dribble. Don't use your platform to say these kinds of things, to bring this attention to the spotlight. Let's stick to sports. Let's stick to between the white lines. Well, what happens when it happens to one of those players who plays between the white lines? I'm very interested to see how that narrative shifts and where it goes, because now, as much as police brutality has been told to be kept out of the mouths of athletes and to be, you know, not mentioned in the same context as these major sporting events that draw millions and millions and once a year billions of viewers, what happens when it happens to a guy who played in one of those billions of viewer events 3 years ago? What happens to a guy who's been competing for one on a really good football team for the last 2 years? A guy who's probably the most popular player on his team. It's a very, very tough story. Obviously, we all have some sort of personal connection to a story like this. You know, just last week, something happened to a friend of mine who I used to play football with along these lines. It's really tough, Jason. I don't know where we're going
from
here.
By the way, Calais Campbell also was, he was driving by and tried to help out and just tried to find out what was going on. He was detained briefly and then let go as well. It's going to be a lot of reporting on it. We will follow it as it goes along. Watch this space. Coming up, odds and ends, everything we didn't talk about in the first five segments. All right, just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Monday. Don't forget, if you miss anything from the show, anything at all, the Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast is available for you. You can watch it on Spotify. Go and subscribe right now. Unless you want to sit there and put it on your DVR on television, on over 200 affiliates around the country. Happy to announce that we continue to grow, and there will be even more growth as we go through the middle of October. Stay tuned for that. But the podcast is available everywhere. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, you name it, we are on all of them. Without any further delay, Sam Yarnell, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. Two snoozers for finals at the U.S. Open over the weekend. Look, I don't want to say I told you so, but I told you so. Sabalenka runs through Pegula. Not a surprise. This was Aryna Sabalenka's tournament from the get-go. She is so good. She is playing at such a high level right now. And take all the rankings, put them aside. I will say what I said last week again, and that is when she is playing her very best tennis, there isn't anybody better on the women's side right now, period. Full stop. glad, happy for Jessica Pegula that she was able to get into a final and all that, and it's wonderful. But at the end of the day, she is not on that level.
Yeah, and she still can't win the big one. I've talked at multiple points about the dominance of Aryna Sabalenka, obviously going off of what Jason has said about her massive, massive talents. Even when we did that fun exercise last week where we looked up the fastest serves in tennis history. Mentioning all that, some of those came in this match. Sabalenka she was hitting it really well. The narrative around Pegula, it's still going to be, Jason, she cannot win the big one.
No, she certainly cannot. On the men's side, look, Tiafoe and Fritz late last week in that men's semifinal was a great watch. It really was like the best match of the tournament, arguably. Taylor Fritz was able to beat Francis Tiafoe. That's one that Tiafoe is going to regret for a long time, with an opportunity to get into a final. But neither of these guys were beating Jannik Sinner, who also is playing at another level. And the question also becomes, Sam, and I know you got something else you want to weigh in on here when it comes to this, but question also becomes, who's your player of the year in tennis? Because Sinner and Alcaraz both won a major. You know, both won a slam. For me, it's Jannik Sinner. But I can understand there'll be people who look at it the other way.
Well, and Djokovic won the Olympics
and made three deep runs at majors. Yeah, I know.
I'm not saying that he is, that he's got to be in the conversation for sure. Yep. My thing about all this, Jason, is shame on the U.S. Open. Again, I emphasize the first two letters of this tournament. U.S., the U.S. Open, for holding their finals for both the women and the men's, but specifically for the men, on opening weekend in the NFL. The first time in 9 months we've had a full slate of NFL football on a Sunday, and the U.S. Open decides to schedule their tennis match for it. Thank God they did. I'm interested to see the ratings because they can't be high, and thank goodness for that, because yawn, a three-set winner and domination from Jannik Sinner. But tennis, you got to think this through. I don't know if it means starting the tournament 2 days earlier and finishing with your men's final on Friday night. Whatever the case may be, you cannot do this again, because nobody was paying attention to the U.S. Open on Sunday, and everybody was paying attention to football. I don't know why tennis hasn't realized that football is king, but they got to come around.
I had football on the giant television. I had tennis on my iPad. That was how I handled it. That was it. NASCAR, anybody? Joey Logano, your winner in Atlanta. So Logano wins the first playoff event of the year. They're down to 12. Ryan Blaney finished second. So Logano is first. Blaney, Christopher Bell, Tyler Reddick, William Byron, Alex Bowman, Austin Cindric, Chase Elliott, Daniel Suarez, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, Ty Gibbs, the 12 remaining drivers in NASCAR's playoffs. Real quick, Angel Reese done for the year. That news coming down on, I believe, Saturday. Angel Reese lost for the season with a wrist injury. She will not play for the remainder of the year.
I mean, it puts to bed the narrative that she had a chance in the Rookie of the Year, if it wasn't already. I know you and I constantly talk on this show about how Caitlin Clark is definitely the Rookie of the Year, but it's a shame. Angel Reese definitely brought a lot of viewers to the WNBA. So, you know, hope she gets better and comes back as well as she played this year next season.
I agree. And she has to work on a perimeter game for next year. She's already promising to do that. That is the evolution of Angel Reese we need to see. All right, Monday Night Football. The first Monday Night Football game of the NFL season, Sam. Niners -4.5 on FanDuel. Who do you like? 43.5, by the way, the total.
That's me asleep, because this game is going to be a snoozer.
What are you talking about?
Give me the Niners -4. I don't love either side
minus
of total.
Four and a half.
I'll give you
it's
my best bet in a sec.
All right.
There are fours in the market.
All right.
So he mentioned FanDuel. Go out and shop a little bit. Four and a half. They'll win by a touchdown.
All right.
I would like the under more. I don't think either team scores a lot of points. Aaron Rodgers interception, -125. That's my best bet.
I think the Jets are going to win on the field. How do you like them apples? Plus 176. Gangrene! The year of the Jets! It starts now! We will erase the tape if I am wrong. We'll see you tomorrow.